We can't be afraid and squeamish in the face of oppression when we are building real resistance.
Radio.
Arguments are not going to attract people. Winning is going to attract people.
Radio.
The Poor People's Riot, as they call it, was necessary, it was reasonable, and it was just.
Radio.
And if you get in my way to make sure that that man gets housing, or that he gets enough to eat, I will move you.
Radio.
Okay.
And welcome to OCAP Radio. This is Friday, October the 1st, and we're here on CKLN 88.1 with word of mouth news. We have an exciting, great lineup for you this evening. But first of all, I have a couple of announcements to make. As always, an OCAP-themed radio show, we're going to talk a little bit about some upcoming events for OCAP. As some people may be keeping track of, we have OCAP has been around this year for 20 years. It's the 20-year anniversary of OCAP. We're very excited to celebrate that. And OCAP will be having a celebration and fundraiser on November the 27th this year. So mark the date in your calendars. We're going to have a dinner and an evening of entertainment on November the 27th, starting at 6 p.m. at the Cecil Street Community Center. Now we're going to have more flyers and posters about that coming up. We're going to talk a lot about it because it's going to be a really great evening recapping some of OCAP's history over the last 20 years, which has been varied and absolutely fascinating, really. So I invite you all to come out to join that. Also we're going to be celebrating a reception to celebrate Rogelio, a longtime OCAP member, has finally had victory over his 11-year struggle to get permanent status in Canada. It's been a long road for Rogelio, coming from Mexico after 18 months of torture. He arrived in Canada to then face another struggle of 11 years fighting to gain status in this country. We'll be holding a reception October the 15th at Cinecycle. That's 129 Spadina Avenue in a building down the alley. That'll be from 7 p.m. till 1 a.m. And I invite you all to attend that reception for Rogelio, and donations will be warmly accepted at that to help OCAP keep going with its fundraising efforts. And now, up next, I have we have Christina Fernandez here in the studio. Christina's going to be speaking to us about the situation in Chile right now under the new president, who is a billionaire. That's Sebastian Piñera. And we're going to speak to Christina. Christina, hi. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you here. Now, Christina, I know you just ran in. I hope you had time to catch your breath.
Yes, I did.
That's great. Now, can you tell me a bit about the situation in Chile with this new president? How did he come to be elected this billionaire?
Oh, where should I start? It's a long history, but to make it short, he came to be president under the Alliance for Change. That is what it's called, his new movement, so-called. And his discourse is so attractive because he's very astute in using a discourse that is borrowed or stolen from the left.
Oh.
And unfortunately, it fools a lot of people.
So he's like a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Exactly. And that's the exact description of the guy.
So he's not going in saying austerity measures. He's going in saying we are the people.
We're the good guys. Let's all unite Chileans so that we can push this country forward into the new future. That is his, you know, his main slogan. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, he is just a continuation again as Bachelet, the president, the ex-president that we had, Michelle Bachelet. He's just a continuation of the same old thing. The Pinochet constitution that is still very much in place since 1981, a fascist constitution that they have not had the will to change, the political will to change. And Bachelet, under Bachelet's government, the criminalization of social dissent was brutal. Mm-hmm. And with this guy, it's just a continuation. It's all the same thing.
Now, tell me, how is he able to, if he's going in this with this false leftist rhetoric, how is he able to continue this criminalization of dissent? How is that shaping in Chile right now?
Well, it's shaping in very, very clear ways. One of the things that is shaping about is the fact that under Bachelet, under the Bachelet government, the privatization of education, of health, and the selling of part of our sea to Norway, Spain, and Japan so that they can come and fish whatever they want, mm-hmm. while leaving thousands of fishermen poor, without their livelihood. That is one of the ways that it has expressed itself. But also the fact that when the earthquake happened in Chile in February 25th, I believe, this guy has made tremendous amount of money on that, and it was unable. I think the earthquake was a very good indication of how unable and how they were not. The government did not provide the people with adequate or any kind of help. Subsidies or economic health, mm-hmm. and instead what the people were forced to do is they were going into supermarkets and actually taking the food by their own means because mm-hmm. they were not given any, and he negotiated with four major companies that own the whole food network or food. The food conglomerates, and one actually is a Walmart, but he had to pay millions of dollars so that they could actually give food to the people that were in dire need after the earthquake, mm-hmm. and so it is the privatization of Chile's education and Chile's health, the further impoverishment of a large population, of a large section of the population in Chile. I guess it's more than 4.5 million in total poverty. That is one of the many ways that this government is again, continuing the policies of the Bachelet government. And the Bachelet government is continuing the policies of the Pinochet government.
Right. And now, how are the people of Chile responding to this, and the left in particular, and when they respond?
Well, the left has been criminalized.
Has been criminalized. Yeah,
very,
and how
really
is
brutally.
That?
And that is political prisoners. Uh-huh. Even though they constantly deny that there are no political prisoners in Chile or political prisoners of conscience, when Bachelet was doing her tour in the United Nations and in Europe, she flatly denies that there are no political prisoners in Chile, when in fact we have built, the government has built maximum security prisons, many more than they were ever in Chile. And in those maximum security prisoners, they are right now holding a large number of Mapuche political prisoners who have been in a hunger strike for many, many, many days.
This is one of the shames of the
Piñera government, is that these people are willing to die for their cause. They're willing to die for the fact that they need to be recognized as a people. They need to be recognized as a nation. And yet Piñera has done nothing. Instead, criminalizes them and tries them under the anti-terrorist law.
I understand that we had an interview about that about a month ago. Now, is Piñera recognizing the hunger strike at all? Has there been any recognition that that's ongoing?
No. He has not. He acknowledged that there is some kind of vague problem, okay, but not even that. I mean, that is to be too generous with the guy. Right. The guy is corrupt. The guy represents the worst part of Chilean right wingers, which is the Chilean right wingers, the right wing that is very, very much fascist. Mm-hmm. That is very much the legacy of Pinochet. Mm-hmm. That is why this guy is so dangerous. And as you say, he's, you know, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. But he's dangerous because he, in front of the camera, he smiles, but behind. He is destroying the entire country, and it's causing. When we talk about Piñera, I mean, it's not just him. He is one of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is happening.
Bachelet, right?
Right.
It's just a continuation of the same old thing, because Chile has an underlying... the fascists really never left Chile.
Right.
They're still there. So all those guys that were the torturers and, you know, they worked in the intelligence apparatus in Chile, right now, some of those guys are occupying important positions in the government.
Mm.
And that to me is a very dark, the very scary, to say the least, part of this whole Piñera government, because he was very, 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 very clever in choosing the people that were going to be around his government.
Right.
And he chose businessmen, bankers, and fascist, clearly fascist, racist, homophobic, the worst.
And it has
of
kept
the elements,
that Pinochet,
right?
Constitution.
Totally.
Constitution
he relies on the army to keep him in power.
Right.
And
right.
That's why I'm saying that the fascist, the whole fascist part of Chile has not gone away. Because, and here I'm going to be very, very critical, the left has not had the guts to deal and confront this problem.
Ah.
And to me, if you do not confront this problem, if you do not have a cleansing of fascist element in Chilean society, Chilean society will never be a healthy society that could achieve true democracy and dignity and justice.
And when you say that the left hasn't confronted this corrupt government, in what ways do you mean they haven't? They haven't organized?
No, they have. They are organized.
Yeah.
Like, don't take me wrong. Like, don't get me wrong. They are organized.
Mm-hmm.
People are disappointed with political parties, first of all. Okay.
So
what has replaced political parties is a social movement. There are social movements everywhere, and they're very strong, whether it's the women's, the students. And so, for example, I'll just give you an example. When the rise to the when the transit fare was going up, the students went on a massive scale out on the streets, right, for days. Not just the high schools and universities, but the younger kids, you know, the junior high schools. They were all on the streets protesting against this. So, yes, there is a movement. Yes, there is organizing, right? But it is not the political parties that are leading this organizing.
Okay.
And political parties, there's a lot of finger pointing and a lot of blame when we talk about the coup d'etat in Chile of September 11th of 1973.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be very, very clear that I lay the blame and the responsibility on all political parties on the left.
Mm.
Every single one of them, because it is easy to finger point and to blame this or that party, but no, they were all, because Allende came to power with a fragmented left,
right.
And the left, us, the left here in Canada, is divided, and it hasn't been able to achieve that unity that will allow through social change, that could sustain that social change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's very important, right? Mm-hmm. That could sustain it, that could carry it forward into the future, right? Instead, what happened is, well, September 11 happened, and that killed the dream of hope that a lot of Chileans had and had the right to have, right? And so that will be my take on it.
Right. And now I want to switch gears a little bit here, but when you talk about fragmented lefts and the responsibility of those and corrupt right-wing governments, can you relate this a bit to what happened earlier this week in Ecuador?
Oh, my God. Ecuador, yes.
Yeah.
That really concerns me.
Okay.
It concerns me because of what happened in Honduras.
Okay.
I think it is a clear trend of the Obama administration
to create
this internal conflict
in
Latin America, because Latin America is a continent of hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's where things happen, where dreams come true, where revolution it springs. It's in the air, okay, let's say, to be more romantic about it. But we have Venezuela, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he is consolidating his power. He has to be careful, because Colombia now has 8 U.S. military bases,
yes.
And Colombia is right next to it. There are incursions of paramilitary troops into Venezuelan territory. So, Chavez, take care of yourself.
Okay.
Colombia is not a democratic country. It's funded by the U.S. It's a danger.
Right. Okay?
Ecuador, Correa, Rafael Correa, the president, is not a leftist president.
Okay.
But never mind that. He is a decent kind of guy who is working towards dignity and towards justice for his society. Now, two things. Rafael Correa said to the U.S., we don't want your U.S. military base in Ecuador.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is the debt. We're not paying the debt.
Right.
Now, these two things, U.S. is very angry about.
Yes, well, okay? They want that domination.
So they want to use anything inside the Ecuadorian society to destabilize his government and to eventually topple him. And now the police were on the streets in Ecuador because the president said, okay, you already had an increase in salaries, and you also have a bonus, okay, which is a huge bonus they get at the end of the year.
Okay.
Now, you're not going to get the bonus because Ecuador is in dire economic problems.
Yes.
Right? That's what the police didn't like.
Yes.
Right? So they're using this so-called labor dispute. Uh-huh. They're using it to topple, as an attempt to topple the government. Because actually, the president was outside, and they threw tear gas at him, and they tried to kidnap him. But there's a part of the military that's supporting him, and there's a part that is not, or a section of the military that is not supporting him.
Okay.
And that is the danger here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the trend of the Obama administration is create these internal problems,
mm-hmm.
fund a government that serves their interest,
yep.
topple the old decent. You know, whenever our government is decent, let's topple it. Let's put a puppet in place, like in Honduras.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So we control the resources and we control everything else, right?
Yes.
And so that is the trend in Latin America. So to me, it's very dangerous.
Yes, that's incredibly dangerous. Now,
because Obama as Piñera, he smiles a lot.
Mm.
But he's very astute.
Right.
Behind his foreign policy is not different from the Bush administration. It's the same thing.
Absolutely. These are foreign policies.
He is no different from Bush.
And this is
Make
funded
no
by
mistake.
The World Bank and all
exactly,
those types of austerity
exactly.
measures. So that's very
and the Israeli
distressing.
Lobby. Yes.
Yeah. It's very huge. Distressing what's occurring there right now. And it's been a wonderful conversation. Very, very, very eye-opening to have you here in the studio talking. This is fantastic. Now, if folks want to follow this, do you have any suggestions of where they could follow these stories about the action?
Well, you're going to get a lot of information, not only about the Mapuche, but about Chilean society if you go to Mapuche Link.
Mapuche Link. So that's where people want to hear the real story.
Yeah,
the
real story.
On.
If you want to hear the real story,
the
you go
updates
there.
The updates on the hunger strike, then you should go to Mapuche Link.
It's fundamental that they get informed because a lot of Chileans here are really fooled by this so-called transition to democracy. Give me a break. How many more years are you going to have transition to democracy? What you really need is the will to change it.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Well, we really thank you for being here
well,
on
thank
the show
you.
Today. We'd love to have you back and
thank you, yes.
to continue these really great discussions about this.
Thank and you, Kelly.
Thanks so much. You take care, Christina.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was Christina Fernandez speaking about the situation in Chile and the coup in Ecuador last week. Up next, we are hearing a song from Linton Kwesi Johnson. We're going to be hearing De Black Petit Bourgeois. That's up right now. And afterwards, we'll be hearing, we'll be speaking with Wendy Babcock of the Bad Day Coalition about the exciting new challenges to the prostitution laws in Canada.
Talento destiet and the black working class underrated. Them we side with oppressor when the going get rough. Side with aggressor when the going get tough. Them a black petty bourgeois them full of love. And them a black petty bourgeois them full of love. Them say them medicate, them a go on irate.
Show them say they meditate, them a seek operate, them a seek position of the box of blocks, seek promotion of the box of blocks. Them a black petty bourgeois, them full of love. And them a black petty bourgeois, them full of love. Out and a shout all about. To them have a lot of doubt about the strength of blacks. Them a run up them out and a shout all about. But when we launch we attack, them we have a dress back. Them a black petty bourgeois, them full of love. And them a black petty bourgeois, them full of love.
Hello and welcome back to OCAP Radio. That was Linton Kwasi Johnson with De Black Petit Bourgeois. Up next we're going to talk about an exciting new development here in Ontario. Now that is this week, on Tuesday, the Ontario Supreme Court overturned the province's prostitution laws. I mean, they're Canada-wide, but that was based on a challenge of Canada's prostitution laws done by three women here in Ontario. Now, they challenged those prostitution laws on the basis of their safety and well-being. This went before a justice of the Supreme Court over a year ago, and on Tuesday that ruling came down, and it was a first step in a victory towards for sex workers all over Canada and here in Ontario. What happened was they were challenging, there's three prostitution laws in Canada, and it's interesting to note, many people might not know, but a prostitution itself is actually legal in Canada. I say that it's legal. The act of selling sex between consenting adults is a legal transaction in Canada. However, as it currently stands with our laws, everything surrounding that transaction is illegal. Now, these laws came into effect in the 80s in Canada, and the rationale behind them was to keep streets free of harassment. That was what it was said. But what happens, in fact, are these laws end up making sex workers unsafe. And what I can do, what I'm going to do, is go through these three laws. The first law is communicate. That's communicate for the purpose of solicitation, and that law what it is that you are not allowed to speak publicly about the transaction of selling sex. And what that means for people is that if you are working on the street, and it's also to my knowledge that cell phones are considered public, you can't speak to your customer on the street. You can't, lean into their car and ask them a few questions and negotiate a payment system. That leaves sex workers very vulnerable. Sex workers are vulnerable to not being able to speak to their johns for a few minutes. They're unable to get a good idea of who their john is and whether that's safe, their client. The second law is keeping a common body house. This means that you can't sell sex, have a transaction of selling sex in the same place more than once. That includes a hotel room, an apartment, or your house. You can't sell sex safely in your house, so it forces people to go to different locations every time they're going to do this sort of transaction, which has some obvious ramifications. The third act, the third law that was overturned was the living off the avails of prostitution. Now, what that means is that you are unable to hire anyone to work with you in your business. So you can't hire a driver, a security guard, or even a phone person to screen your clients. That leaves sex workers to work alone and to not communicate to anybody about their business. To me, it seems very obvious that what this does is leave people very unsafe in their work. And it turns out that one judge in the Supreme Court of Ontario has agreed with that. She came down with a very strong judgment about that. She said that it contravened sex workers' charters of rights and freedom and their right to safety. In order to practice their business, that they had to choose between safety and falling between the lines of the law. Because as I mentioned before, it's actually legal in Canada to sell sex, for prostitution to be legal. So we're very excited. We were hoping to have Wendy Babcock from the Bad Day Coalition here. Wendy, are you here?
Yep. Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Wendy. Welcome to the show. That's great to hear your voice.
Thank you for having me, Kelly.
That's great. So I just did a little intro, some explanation about those laws that were overturned. Can you tell me how's the organized sex worker community feeling about this news this week?
I think they're feeling great. I know myself personally and a few other people I know actually cried from the decision of how happy we were and how much hard work went into the decision. Not only by the people here in Ontario, but all around Canada and all around the world. So this is a huge step for us.
That's great. That's great. Now, can you tell me a bit about the next steps with these laws being overturned?
Whenever you're going after a federal law, which is what we're doing, prostitution is federal, not a provincial law, you have to start off with the lower court and before you move on to the higher court, the Supreme Court. So the next step would be asking for appeal from the Ontario Appeal Court to go straight to the Supreme Court of Canada and to take it up there. The government did, though, appeal the lower court's decision, I think, on Wednesday.
Okay. And now what does that mean for sex workers who are practicing in Ontario today and in the next few weeks or months? What does that mean for them?
From my understanding, what it means is that it actually doesn't take effect for 30 days of the decision to allow government police to know how to deal with the new decision.
Okay.
So I have a countdown going. So we have 28 days now.
28 days.
And then sex workers will be able to work decriminalized. So working from their own home, working from the street, whatnot, unless the government asks for and it's accepted an even longer period of time.
Okay, so it's important for people to know that right now, for the next 28 days, those laws are still in effect. Is there an indication that the government is going to ask for that 30-day period to be extended? Has the government said anything about that yet?
As of right now, no.
Okay, so
all they've done so far is appeal the lower court's decision.
That's great.
Superior.
So we can keep our fingers crossed that in 28 days, the decriminalization of sex work in Ontario, and would that come into effect in Ontario alone or national?
Only Ontario, because it's an Ontario decision.
Okay.
It's a provincial decision rather than a federal decision, so that's why we have to go to the Supreme Court of Canada to get their consent, and if they side with us, which according to the evidence they really should, it's very compelling that we need decriminalization in Canada. If they rule that there should also be decriminalization, then it will affect all of Canada.
That's fantastic. So in 28 days, we're hoping that it'll shape up that it'll be decriminalized and sex workers are going to be able to work in a much safer manner in that 28 days. Now,
it would be really exciting to see, because one of the problems they've had in BC about opening up their safe house is that because of federal law, they would need an exemption, that law. So they actually haven't been able to build a safe house. And with this new decision, if it becomes nationwide, then we will be able to build safe houses for street-based sex workers who otherwise only have the choice of going with the John.
Going with their client in the car. So a safe house would consist of a building or a dwelling where people could take their dates. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and many safe. I'm not fully aware of all the details of the Vancouver one, but in other places that have safe houses, there's usually security there in case anything happens. There's also counselors there if a sex worker needs any other support in her life or wants to exit sex work. And there's usually also harm reduction programs in place as well. So it's a lot safer for sex workers to work at rather than going into a car. And as we've seen with the high numbers of murders, it's not safe always to go with your John. So it'll be nice now that sex workers can make the choice of working indoors. And if we can help more marginalized sex workers who don't make the same amount of money as a high-end sex worker, building safe houses would be extremely beneficial to the community.
Yeah, that's going to be fantastic. Now, have you spoken to anybody who's working these days?
Yes.
And what are people saying about this on the street?
They're really, well, the sex workers on the street are extremely excited because they tend to be the most targeted by these laws. 95% of prostitution charges are the communication for purposes of prostitution, 95 offenses, prostitution offenses are for communicating. So they're the most heavily hit with the criminal laws, and they're also the most prone to violence. So for them especially, I've seen a lot of them just extreme shock, and then excitement and happiness over the decision.
That's fantastic. And as we also know, I've heard another statistic that 95% of offenses are for the Communicate Law, and they're actually used against the sex workers themselves, and very few clients are actually charged with Communicate. Have you heard that as well?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to note, because it takes two to communicate.
Exactly.
So when more sex workers are being charged, you can see how the law is being discriminatory.
Exactly.
And generally sexist, because in most cases the people charged are female sex workers and the Johns are generally male sex workers. Mm-hmm. So you can see the disparities there, because if two people are communicating, both of them are equally have committed a criminal offense and should be charged equally, but you'll tend to see it's mostly sex workers that are charged.
Absolutely, that's true. Now, I just want to quickly say I wasn't able to introduce the Bad Date Coalition when you came on, but the Bad Date Coalition is a coalition of sex workers and agencies and other folks supporting sex workers that puts together a bad date book every month to allow sex workers to be aware of bad dates that are out there. And you guys recently had a bingo fundraising night. That was last weekend. And I heard that was really successful. Now you have another fundraising event coming up in December. Can you tell me a bit about that? Really quickly.
We're changing that to February.
That's
great.
And
it's going to be the Toronto Horror Achievement Awards in tribute. Toronto Horror Achievement in tribute, so TWAT, and it'll be a celebration of the contributions that sex workers have played for bettering the community.
Well, that's great. Well, we look forward to having you back on, especially we're going to look to having you back on when this 28-day countdown is over again to speak more to this issue.
Okay, great.
Okay, well, thanks so much for being on, Wendy, and we'll look forward to hearing from you more.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks. That was Wendy Babcock here on OCAP Radio speaking about the overturnment of the prostitution laws in Ontario. So that's it for OCAP Radio this evening on CKLN 88.1. I apologize to Ventana Albario coming up next. We've gone over time a bit, and I hope host Maria Elena Escobar will forgive me. And as always, I want to thank my brilliant tech master, Mark, who does a great job every week lining up our interviews and doing the teching for this show. He is the brains behind this show. Thank you so much, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.